Anya and Gianni sat at a table outside the cafe, sipping coffee and waiting on their sandwiches, and in Gianni's case, a side of French fries. Gianni had the satellite phone so they wouldn't miss Charles when he called, and it rested on the table, the ringer set to high. They were halfway through their lunch when a stranger pulled out the chair between them and sat down at their table. Anya froze with her fork partway to her mouth. He was a big man, in both height and weight. He reminded her of one of those Russian weightlifters she'd seen in the Olympics, heavy muscle layered over a big frame. His head was shaved smooth, his eyes were a dark brown, and he had a cauliflower ear that threw off the rounded symmetry of his face. He was dressed simply in dark blue coveralls worn over a thermal shirt.
Good morning, my American friends.
With an impish grin, he stole a French fry off Gianni's plate. Anya wasn't buying the I'm harmless act, not for an instant. She casually put her fork down and let her right hand fall below the level of the table, where it would be out of sight if she had to draw her sword. The Russian had spoken English, but Anya gave no sign that she understood that language.
Comment désagréable.
In French, she took him to task for his rudeness at interrupting their lunch. Across the table, Gianni was getting ready to take some action of his own, though what he was intending to do, Anya didn't know. Apparently, the newcomer sensed the pending explosion as well. He lifted his meaty hands off the table and held them before his chest in a gesture of surrender.
Easy now. Sir Charles said you may be a little jumpy. No need to get upset.
As if on cue, the satellite phone in the middle of the table chimed in. They all turned and stared at it.
You going to get that?
How do you know Sir Charles Davies?
Answer the phone.
Anya snatched up the phone, got up from the table, and took a few steps away.
Hello?
How is everything there, Anya? Are you and Johnny doing all right?
We're fine, if you ignore the big Russian with the wrestler's ear who's claiming to know you and interrupting our lunch.
He's there already. I am happy to hear I can add efficiency to his list of many talents.
I'd say that's a good thing if I had any idea what he's doing here.
His name is Vladimir Vikovsky, and he is going to get you underground. That is, of course, if you are still interested in pursuing the library.
You know I am. Tell me about our new friend.
Well, he's the leader of a group that calls itself the Urban Underground, whose stated aim is to study the historical, ecological, and social aspects of the Moscow Underground. Personally, I think he just gets a kick out of exploring places he's not supposed to be.
Oh, I've heard of the Urban Underground. I've even had help from them in the past.
Good. And don't let Vladimir's size and laid-back manner fool you. He's a veritable genius when it comes to moving around down there. If there is anyone on the planet who can get you to where you need to be, he's the one. You can talk about the library freely with him. I'm confident in his discretion.
All right. I think we can live with that.
How's Gianni holding up?
Just fine.
Yeah, and just let me know if you think he's having difficulties. You are far more used to this kind of thing than he is.
I'm sure he'll rise to the occasion.
Good.
How about I check in with you tomorrow morning, once we know exactly how we intend to move forward?
That sounds fine, Anya. Talk to you tomorrow. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Anya rejoined the others at the table. She made the introductions, then made sure Vladimir understood what they were looking for.
There are 6 levels of tunnels under Moscow. Perhaps as many as 12. Old sewer systems, fountain foundations, drainage tunnels, rerouted streams and underground river systems, subway tunnels and access systems. I have mapped the first 3 completely. I can take you where you need to be.
Anya knew Moscow had been built along the swampy banks of the Moskva River. Workers quickly discovered that the soil was soft and pliable, the kind that easily gives way to a determined man with a shovel. As the village grew into a city, expanding outward, it also grew downward. Paranoid czars built underground bunkers and vaults to hide their treasures and to provide protection from unexpected attacks. Subsequent rulers had followed in Ivan the Terrible's footsteps, bending the underground to their will. In the late 1700s, Catherine the Great had decided she didn't like the location of the Neglina River and had brought in architects to divert its entire length into a vast underground network of brick-lined tunnels, where it still ran. Under Stalin, the Soviets had dug even deeper, building secret tunnels, fallout shelters, and KGB listening posts. The idea that they might make use of the underground to reach the vault rather than descending through the Kremlin itself was a good one, and Anya was frankly surprised she hadn't come up with that solution herself. Seeing they had another guest, the waiter approached, but Anya waved him off.
Let me see this map you have.
We don't have it anymore.
Where is it?
Anya explained what had happened the night before, and the reason they were holed up at the hotel down the street rather than back at the Marriott.
You think the map is still in the hotel safe?
I don't know, and I'm hesitant to call the hotel in case someone has put two and two together and can identify me and Gianni as the guests involved in the shootout last night.
We should go see. I know someone behind the desk who will check for me. Cost me the price of dinner, but she is a nice girl.
I'm willing to try if you are.
You're as crazy as she is.
Anya and Vladimir smiled at each other.
This might just work out after all.
Vlad, as he preferred to be called, drove a slate-gray Volkswagen minibus so covered with graffiti that it looked like a throwback to the 60s. The three of them piled in, Vladimir behind the wheel, Anya riding shotgun, and Gianni sitting between the two seats on a plastic milk crate that served as a makeshift chair. The sounds the engine made did nothing to reassure either of the two passengers that it could actually get them from point A to point B without breaking down at least half a dozen times. Their Russian friend seemed unconcerned, however, so Anya did her best to ignore it. Vlad was a spastic, though adept, driver, and negotiated the busy city streets with a deftness that spoke of long practice. Almost before Anya knew it, they were entering the center of the city. Vlad drove past the Marriott and pulled the van to the curb a couple of blocks farther down the street. He watched the entrance of the hotel through his side mirror for several minutes.
Wait here.
Satisfied, he hopped out of the van, leaving the engine running. As soon as he turned away, Anya slid over to the driver's seat, ready to take charge of the Volkswagen if they needed to leave in a hurry. She watched Vlad through the side view mirror as he made his way across the busy street and disappeared inside the Marriott.
Let's just hope he comes out again.
Sergeant Arkady Danislav was likewise holed up in a vehicle, watching the entrance to the Marriott, though the Mercedes sedan he'd been loaned for the duration of the assignment was decidedly more comfortable than the Volkswagen Anya and her companion were waiting in up the street. The night before had been a disaster, and Danislav was still berating himself for the mistakes he'd made. He'd wrongly assumed that the Creed woman wasn't a threat, and so he and his men had been unprepared for the level of response. It had taken Danislav hours to clean up the mess, and he'd had to invoke his authority as an agent of the Federal Security Service several times, declaring the entire incident a matter of national security in order to keep the Moscow police out of the mess. Goshenko hadn't been happy, but he had let Danislav deal with it without interference. It had been a long night, and more than anything else, Danislav wanted to go home and get some sleep. But he had a hunch that Anya Creed might return to the hotel to get her belongings. And he wanted to be here if she did. He'd intentionally left her hotel room alone for that very reason, not wanting to reveal his hand. His men hadn't been carrying any ID last night, so right now she probably suspected she'd inadvertently become tied up in some kind of failed kidnapping, perhaps by the Russian mafia or some other criminal organization. Such events had become increasingly common over the past several years, after all. A sudden noise brought him out of his reverie, and he looked out the window to see a burly man in coveralls and with a backpack slung over his shoulder, crossing the street with little regard for the traffic moving in either direction.
Jackass.
He then turned away to watch the entrance to the hotel. Anya had begun to grow concerned, thinking Vlad had been inside the hotel too long to just recover something from the safe, when she heard the blare of a horn and saw him cutting across traffic toward them. She slid over to her own seat, and a moment later Vlad opened the door and climbed inside, holding her backpack. He passed it over with that crazy grin on his face.
No problem. Got the pack and the map, plus date for Friday night.
Anya couldn't believe it. She unzipped the pack and looked inside. Her laptop and digital camera were there, along with the document tube in which they'd placed the map. Vlad pulled out into traffic.
How on earth?
My friend also has pass key to guest rooms. Thought you might want your computer back, too.
I do, thanks. There wasn't any problem getting the pack out of the room.
No problem. Friend said big incident last night with the FSS, but it was hushed up and she did not have details. You wouldn't be knowing anything about that now, would you?
The FSS? Those men last night were with the Federal Security Service? Damn, that's gonna complicate things.
Anya knew that the FSS had access to all kinds of surveillance information coming out of traffic cameras, bank ATMs, private security systems, you name it. That was going to make it very difficult for Anya and company to move around the city. Never mind how difficult it would be to get out of the country if an official alert for their arrest and apprehension was put out. Somehow, the FSS must have connected them to the damaged statue in the cathedral. Though why that was an issue for the former KGB was beyond her.
It seems more like something the Moscow police would handle. And if the men chasing us last night were FSS agents on official business, why didn't they identify themselves? My spidey sense tells me something else is going on. Where are we going?
World headquarters for the Urban Underground.
As it turned out, the headquarters for the world-famous Urban Underground turned out to be a dingy flat on the second floor of a crumbling old apartment building. Vlad's flat, actually. The space had been converted into a kind of makeshift office. Anya stood in the center of the room, staring at the hundreds of hand-drawn maps that decorated the white-painted walls like its own kind of graffiti. They had been drawn to resemble three-dimensional cutaway plans, so that one could see the relationships between one level and the next at a glance. The level of detail was astounding, and Anya was suddenly very pleased that Charles had managed to track Vykovsky down and enlist him in their adventure. He was going to be an invaluable resource for helping them navigate the underground in search of the vault.
Map, please.
Anya handed it over without hesitation. Vlad opened the document tube, carefully pulled out the map, and then unrolled it on the table. He rooted around in a drawer for a few minutes until he found a jeweler's loop. He spent long moments studying the drawings and the annotations on its surface, and then walked over to one wall, comparing the information on the map with several of the drawings there. Clearly unsatisfied, he moved to a second section of drawings and then a third. Gianni was casting disparaging glances in Vlad's direction, but Anya ignored him, not yet willing to give up on the big Russian.
Hoo-hoo!
Then all of a sudden, Vlad tapped the wall hard with his fist. He turned to face them.
Who wants to go exploring?
After watching the hotel entrance all night, Danislav had turned the duty over to a subordinate and returned to his apartment for a few hours of sleep. He awoke feeling refreshed and ready to take on the challenge ahead of him, finding two fugitives in a city of more than 10 million people. The best thing, he knew, was to start at the beginning. In this case, that meant a visit to the offices of the Federal Migration Service. His FSS credentials allowed him to cut through the red tape, and within minutes of arriving, he was in a cubicle with a pert little platinum blonde aide who had been ordered to give him whatever he needed. He requested the entrance records for Anya Creed and gave her the date he believed Creed had entered the country, but it really wasn't necessary. The massive database the Federal Migration Service, or FMS, kept on every individual who crossed the nation's borders was more than sophisticated enough to find the records he wanted with just a name. But adding the date would allow them to cull the records into something more manageable if she had made more than one visit in the past several months. As it turned out, she hadn't visited Moscow very often. On this particular trip, Miss Creed had arrived in Moscow the night before the incident at St. Basil's. The records showed that she and Gianni Trevino had arrived on Aeroflot Flight 861 and had subsequently been detained together for a short time while passing through immigration. Danislav had the aide call up what information they had on Trevino, which wasn't much. He entered Russia with an Italian passport that listed his legal residence as an address in Rome and his occupation as an artist. This corresponded to what Dr. Petrescu had told him. The woman, Creed, had come to study the text of the Gospel of Gold, while her male companion, whose name Petrescu had either missed or forgotten, had been there to examine the artwork adorning the Gospel's pages. His attention returned to the notation that Creed and her companion had been detained upon arrival. There wasn't any indication of what had happened to require the FMS officers to do so, Just a quick note that they had been detained for questioning. Curious, he had the aide write down the home number for the shift supervisor from that day, a man named Yuri Basilovich. Perhaps he could shed some light on the issue. Danislav also had her print out copies of the fugitive's passport photos, then thanked her for her help, and headed back to his office in the Kremlin. There he gathered the 25 men Goshenko had placed at his command and divided them into teams of five. Each team member was given copies of the passport photos, and then the teams were assigned various sectors around the city and sent to begin searching. The chance that any of them would actually stumble upon the fugitives was slim, but it was better than doing nothing. Once everyone was gone, Danislav pulled out the phone number he'd gotten from the aide, and moments later had Mr. Basilovich on the phone. The conversation was short, but not very sweet, at least not for the immigration supervisor.
I understand that a Miss Anya Creed was detained by your people when she arrived in Moscow.
Oh, that? It was nothing. Just a slight misunderstanding.
But why was she detained?
I assure you that it was nothing that would concern you.
Listen here, Basilovich. Unless you would like to be reassigned to some shithole in Mongolia, I suggest you answer my questions without any evasions or excuses.
Okay. It's just that... Well, it will sound silly, but the reason I had Miss Creed flagged was because I'm a fan of the television show she hosts, Chasing History's Monsters, the biggest one in all of Russia. I just wanted to meet her in person. She's always discovering the most fascinating things. In fact, I bet that laptop of hers is full of information about whatever she's searching for now. I'd give anything to see what's on it.
Danislav hung up without another word, snatched the photos of Creed and Trevino off his desk, and dashed out of the office. 2 hours after deciding to continue the search, Anya, Gianni, and Vladimir were back in the Volkswagen minivan, headed for a sidewalk ventilation shaft near the crumbling remains of what had once been Moscow State University in Manege Square. Back in the 50s, the main university had relocated to Sparrow Hill in southwest Moscow, leaving only a handful of faculty buildings operational at the original site a few blocks from the Kremlin. Vlad assured them that they would be able to slip into the underground without a lot of difficulty. From there, they would descend two levels while gradually making their way south about half a mile until they reached the starting point designated on Fioravanti's map. It sounded like a plan to Anya. She sat up front, dressed in clothes borrowed from a female friend of Vladimir's. The jeans were a little too long, and the knitted sweater hung loosely on her athletic frame. But Anya knew how cool it could be underground, and she was glad to have the warmer clothing. She glanced in Gianni's direction. He was wearing borrowed clothing, too, both of them having lost their luggage in their rapid departure from their hotel. The normally well-dressed Italian was not happy about it, either. The Marriott was only a few blocks away, so Danislav didn't bother with his department-issue vehicle, making the trip on foot instead, berating himself the entire time. He'd been watching the hotel for their return, but hadn't thought of examining their belongings for information relative to the search for the library. Once at the Marriott, he summoned the manager, flashed his credentials, and asked to be let into the fugitives' rooms. The manager had dealt with the KGB before the FSS and didn't hesitate in providing access to each of the adjoining rooms. Danislav started with Creed's, which, as it turned out, didn't take long because she hadn't bothered to unpack. She was living out of her suitcase, as if expecting to leave at a moment's notice. Even her toiletries, soap, shampoo, toothbrush, and toothpaste, were still inside one of her roller bag's outer pockets. In contrast, Trevino's room looked as if he intended to stay a while. His clothes were neatly put away in the drawers of the armoire, and his shaving kit and other toiletries were carefully arranged in the bathroom. Nowhere, however, did Danislav find a backpack with a laptop in it. After a half-hour drive, Vlad pulled into a narrow alley behind several decrepit-looking buildings. He parked the van right up along the sidewalk to block anyone passing by from getting a good view of the grate covering the ventilation shaft only a few feet away. He pocketed the keys and turned to his companions.
Time to suit up!
For Vlad, that meant donning a dirty yellow fireman's jacket, a battered motorcycle helmet without a visor, and a pair of rubber wading boots. He pulled similar gear from the back of the van for Anya and Gianni, who stared in dismay at the horrible green boots he'd just been given.
You're kidding, right?
You look good in boots, like a real member of Urban Underground.
While Anya and Gianni got dressed in the relative cover of the van, Vlad strapped headlamps to their spelunkers helmets, checked to be sure the batteries were fresh, and stashed extra sets in the pockets of his voluminous coat.
It wouldn't do to be a few hundred feet beneath the surface and run out of light. Wouldn't do at all.
Vlad gave each of them a small waste pack containing 4 chemical light sticks, 2 bottles of water, and a handful of granola bars. Then he slung a nylon climbing rope over one shoulder.
Just in case.
Last but not least, he grabbed a hefty iron crowbar from a bucket of them in the back of the van. Vlad scanned the street, double-checking that they were alone. The van would be picked up by another member of the Urban Underground, but for now it kept what they were about to do from wandering eyes. He jammed one end of the crowbar between the bars of the grate and turned it to set the hook. He pulled the end of the grate up a good 3 feet off the ground.
Quickly, down the ladder.
After checking the records, the manager looked up at the obviously impatient Danislav.
Yes, Miss Creed did place something in the safe recently, but it was retrieved a few hours ago.
Retrieved?
Yes, she sent a courier with signed authorization and the proper ID for a pickup earlier today.
Damn it!
Danislav headed for the front door, angry with himself for not thinking of this sooner. He'd been right here, watching the entrance when the courier had come in, he guessed. He had inadvertently let their best lead slip from their fingers without even knowing it. Danislav had just stepped outside when he received better news.
Danislav.
We've got him, sir.
Identify yourself and where you are.
Lieutenant Chernov, sir. We're in Manege Square, sir. The fugitives and another man, a Russian national from the looks of him, are entering the ventilation shaft on Doheny Prospect. We're going to follow them.
What? Wait! I want you to... Oh, fuck!
Danislav nearly smashed the phone on the ground. An elderly woman walking nearby gave him a dirty look. Manege Square was on the far side of the Kremlin, adjacent to Red Square. It wasn't more than a 20-minute walk on a good day. Danislav took off down the street at a run, cursing his earlier decision to leave his staff car behind. Anya descended a carbonate-encrusted ladder that looked as if it had been there for half a century or more. When she reached the bottom of the ladder, she stepped away from it in the darkness and flipped on her helmet light. She was standing in a brick-lined sewer tunnel. It was dry, indicating it hadn't been used in many years, and extended in both directions as far as she could see. Gianni stepped down off the ladder and took a moment to turn on his own headlamp. After Vladimir replaced the ventilation grate above, he joined them at the bottom of the ladder.
This way.
Vlad set off, keeping to the center of the tunnel, his lamp lighting the way ahead. They hadn't gone very far before they began to see evidence that the tunnels weren't deserted. Discarded trash, sleeping areas made of cardboard and cast-off clothing, occasional piles of human waste.
Gypsies, criminals, political refugees, ex-soldiers, the mentally ill. The underground is haven to them all. Entire communities have moved down here to escape the rat race up above. And, of course, those who like to prey on such people have found their way down below as well.
Anya had been in places far more dangerous than this, but something about the darkness of the tunnels and the knowledge that there might be people out there watching them under cover of that darkness made her uneasy. She kept her right hand free, just in case she needed to call her sword in a hurry. It wasn't long after Vlad had answered Anya's unspoken question that they had their first encounter with Moscow's underworld. They had been making their way down a rounded 6-foot-wide tunnel that reminded Anya of a giant aqueduct when they turned a corner and were suddenly in the middle of a homeless encampment. People lined either side of the hall, some standing, some sitting, some curled up in blankets and trying to get some sleep. The lights of a cooking fire or a Bunsen burner broke the darkness here and there, causing shadows to dance and sway along the walls like a crowd of ghosts watching them pass. Vlad didn't stop or acknowledge the presence of the people in the tunnel in any way. He just kept moving, so Gianni and Anya had no choice but to follow. It was the silence that bothered Anya the most. No one moved. No one said a word. With that many people in a confined area, there should have been background noise. Coughing, shifting of positions, talking. But this group was so quiet, it was downright eerie to Anya. And the feeling of being watched took a long time to leave her. They made several turns, descended two more ladders, advanced another few hundred feet, and then came to a halt. Glancing past Vlad, Anya could see the tunnel ahead was blocked by a giant turbine, its three-foot-long blades menacing despite the thick layer of dirt and dust that showed how long it had been since the blades were operational.
Now what?
Vlad's only answer was to put both hands on the center portion between the blades and push. The entire turbine assembly swung outward. With a glance at Gianni and a half-hidden smirk, Vlad waved them through the opening. Once they were on the other side, Vlad pushed the turbine back into place.
10 minute rest, then we go on.
Anya sat with her back against the tunnel wall. She no longer felt ridiculous in the fireman's coat and rubber boots, especially given the amount of muck and sludge they'd had to move through to get this far.
How much farther do you think?
20, maybe 30 minutes before we hit lower levels of the Gremlin. After that, it depends on how good is your map.
Fair enough.
When the break was over, they got underway, this time with Anya bringing up the rear. They left the wide tunnel behind and moved into a narrower one with long stretches of spaghetti-like green cables running along the ceiling. The cables were more modern-looking than anything they had seen so far, which gave Anya hope that they were getting closer.
What was that?
Anya stopped and listened carefully. She stood still, listening. Then, after what felt like forever, it came again. She knew that sound. Had heard it just a short while ago. Someone had just pushed the turbine out of the way and was coming down the tunnel behind them.
It's one of the homeless people we saw earlier, probably looking for a place to bunk down for the night. Nothing to worry the others about.
As they continued, she kept an ear out for whoever it was behind them. After a while, Anya began to get the sensation that she was being watched again. It was like an itch in the center of her back that she couldn't scratch. But each time she turned around and shone her light in the tunnel behind her, she didn't see anything. She didn't like it. If they were being followed, she wanted to know why. A few minutes later, the tunnel bisected a natural cavern, and Anya saw her chance. Several stalagmites rose toward the roof near the exit on the far side of the cavern. As the other two continued forward, Anya slid behind one close to the exit and switched off her light. It didn't take long. Just a moment or two after Vlad and Gianni had moved out of sight, Anya heard someone moving along stealthily behind them. She kept her back to the stalagmite she was hiding behind and held her sword perpendicular to the floor, edge downward, ready to swing it in a low, flat arc. She could feel the intruder getting closer. 4 feet. 3. 2. Anya resettled her grip on the broadsword. The flat of the blade crashed into the head of their pursuer. Anya spun back the other way around the stalagmite and smacked the back of the man's knees. She knelt on his chest and with her free hand flipped her headlamp back on. The light caught the newcomer in the face and shone directly into the night vision goggles he wore. The man tore the goggles off. He wore civilian clothing and a good pair of hiking boots, but he was either government or military. Somehow she just knew it. Anya hauled him to his feet and slammed him against the cavern wall. She pressed the edge of her sword against his neck hard enough to draw a line of blood.
Don't move or I'll slit your throat.
Anya reached inside his coat and yanked a pistol out of the shoulder holster she found there. She let the sword vanish back into the otherwear and held the pistol on her captive instead. She dug around on the intruder's other side, finding a worn leather credentials case. A glance at the ID told her she was holding a member of the Federal Security Service. She took a step back, keeping the gun out but not pointing it directly at him.
Who are you and why are you following us?
I am just following orders.
Anya! Anya!
Over here!
Seconds later, Vlad and Gianni joined her in the cavern.
Who the hell is that?
What orders? Who told you to follow us? And what were you supposed to do when we caught up?
I was supposed to...
The man's head exploded.
Down!
Diving to the side, Anya hit the ground and rolled as bullets ricocheted off the rock wall where she'd been standing seconds before. She pulled herself around to the other side of a nearby stalagmite, hopefully out of the line of fire.
Do you see them?
Anya turned her head to see Vlad tucked behind another outcropping of stone, a big gun in hand. Just like that, the cavern was full of bullets flying everywhere. The enemy was on the far side of the cavern, firing from the cover of darkness, visible only when the muzzle flash lit the space around their guns. Anya had the dead FSS agent's pistol and was firing back, but more discriminately, waiting for those flashes of light. Vlad produced another gun from somewhere on his person and was now alternating shots from one side of the pillar he hid behind to the other. Only Gianni was hanging back behind the protective cover of another stalagmite, and Anya couldn't blame him. He didn't have a gun. Their headlamps were making them perfect targets, but she didn't dare turn hers off. She would have no way to see if their enemies began to move up on them out of the darkness. Besides, if the rest of the invaders were wearing night vision goggles, the light from the headlamps would be effectively blinding them. It couldn't last long. Anya hadn't found any spare magazines on the dead Russian at her feet. Vlad might have an extra reload or two, but given the amount of bullets flying through the air, it wasn't going to be long before those two went dry. She had to get them out of this before that happened. Anya felt it first, a vibration that seemed to come up from the soles of her feet. Small streams of dust and dirt began falling from somewhere above them, and the stalagmite she was hiding behind began to move violently from side to side.
Earthquake!
It wasn't an earthquake, just a cave-in, but that didn't make it any less dangerous. Anya threw her hands up over her head to protect herself from falling debris. Spinning around to the source of the noise, Anya stared in amazement at what she saw. A gaping hole was opening in the wall directly behind Gianni. Rocks and other debris tumbled outward, cascading down on her companion. One of those rocks struck him on the side of the head and he toppled over, clearly dazed. The rapidly enlarging opening revealed another tunnel on the far side. With the intended route now blocked, and their enemy preventing them from going back the way they had come, they didn't have much choice.
Down the rabbit hole it is, then.
Vlad stooped, grabbed the unconscious Gianni under both arms, and dragged him through. Afraid she'd be gunned down the moment she broke cover, Anya glanced back the other way, looking for some sign that the gunmen had beaten a hasty retreat of their own, but she couldn't see anything in the darkness.
Come on!
8 steps. That's all it was between her and the tunnel where Vlad stood. 8 steps. She made 4. The roof of the cavern split open. Darkness enveloped her. She regained consciousness with a heavy weight pressing against her. The ceiling collapse had dumped hundreds of pounds of earth, rock, and ancient brick on her. Only her helmet had kept her skull from being cracked open like an egg. She tried to move and discovered that she couldn't. She couldn't move at all.
You're trapped. You're gonna die here. Suffocate to death all alone.
No, I will not.
She'd been trapped with her right arm thrust up over her head and her face tucked into the crook of her arm, creating a mini air pocket. That had kept her from suffocating. Her head wasn't pounding the way she would have expected it to if she were upside down and all the blood was rushing to it. So she concluded she must be facing upward, toward the surface.
If there even is a surface.
She was not going to give in to panic. Her main problem was oxygen, or lack thereof. That air pocket would be used up very quickly. Her brain was already starting to feel sluggish, her thought processes slowing down. If she didn't get more oxygen soon, she really would die here.
I can't move enough to dig myself out. But then again, maybe I don't have to.
Without moving a muscle, Anya reached into the otherwhere and drew her sword. It speared upward from her outstretched hand and pierced the earth above her head. The tiniest whisper of air drifted down the length of her arm to reach her face. It was musty and full of dirt particles, but it was air nonetheless. There wouldn't have been enough light for her to see even if she hadn't been buried.
Come on! Help me get her out!
But she could hear a strange sound, like a giant cat scratching at the door to be let in, or someone digging into the earth nearby in an effort to rescue her.
I'm here! I'm here!
She worked her wrist muscles, wobbling the blade in the channel it had created, sending earth cascading down toward her, but widening the hole above her head, letting in more air.
Hang on, Anya! We're coming!
She could feel them approaching now. The presence of the sword would be difficult to explain. Soon she was being helped out of the mound of debris that had done its best to kill her. She felt hands on her body, helping her sit up. There were lights in her face and cool water slipping past her lips. She spat to clear the dirt out of her mouth.
Easy.
What happened?
All that gunfire brought the tunnel down on our heads.
Gianni?
I'm good.
Anya turned to get a look at him. His face and hands were covered with dirt, but he smiled wearily.
Did he say anything to you?
What?
The gunman. Did the gunman say anything to you?
They were federal agents, FSS. They were here under orders, but that's all I know.
Damn those bastards and the unholy fools they work for!
Is that all he said?
Yes. He tried to say something more, but that's when his head blew up.
Anya climbed to her feet and took a few tentative steps. When she didn't immediately collapse, she decided nothing was broken. She and the others then took stock of their situation. The route they had previously been traveling was completely blocked by the cave-in, which was a problem because, according to the map, the tunnel the FSS agents had rerouted them away from was the only one in this area that would lead them in the right direction. They were effectively cut off. Even worse, they were now in unfamiliar territory in this newly revealed tunnel. To get out, they were going to have to explore virgin territory and hope for the best.
Great. Just great.
At least they still had the map. Not the original. That was safely back in Vlad's flat. The one she was carrying was a hand-drawn copy. She dug it out of the pocket of her pants and passed it over to Vlad, who took it with a nod. Now came the hard part. They set off down the tunnel before them with Vlad in the lead. Gianni's headlamp had been damaged in the collapse, so he was in the middle, leaving her to bring up the rear. The tunnels here were smaller, and from the looks of them, considerably older. The brick-lined passageways were gone, leaving earthen walls shorn up with thick beams and the occasional section of tunnel that had been bored through solid rock. Unlike many they had passed through earlier, there was very little evidence of recent human occupation. No tracks through the dust, no discarded trash, no piles of human waste. Vlad followed some internal compass known only to him. Whenever there was a fork in the passageway, he would stand before the two choices for a moment, considering, and then make a decision based on some knowledge or instinct Anya couldn't figure out. Each decision was made without hesitation, however, and it was for that reason Anya kept plodding along in his wake. If anyone was going to get them out, it would be Vlad. About 2 hours after they had set off from the cave-in, a horrendous stench filtered down to them from the tunnel ahead.
Oh, God.
Yes, most excellent.
Most excellent? Are you serious?
Anya understood what he meant, however, when they progressed through a few curves and were abruptly stopped by a river of black goo that tried to grip their boots. The source of the horrible stench. The black substance was emanating from a vertical shaft that opened into the center of the passageway. Vlad marched over to it.
Come, look.
He pointed up the shaft. Reluctantly, Anya made her way over to his side. Looking up, she was surprised to see light and the plastic edge of a toilet seat high above.
Hotel homeless. Height of European partners. Not much farther.
Vlad was right. 10 minutes later, they climbed another set of ladders similar to those they'd descended to enter the underground. The grate at the top lifted easily in Vlad's big hands, and they crawled out into the street. Hotel Homeless was an encampment at the edge of the city that was home to those who were down and out. Moments later, Vlad was on his cell phone, making contact with the comrade who had picked up the van. They had survived their first journey into the Moscow underground. The rendezvous point was an abandoned military warehousing facility that had been mothballed shortly after the end of the Cold War. It was about a 20-minute drive from the Kremlin. Goshenko's driver was waiting for him beside a black Mercedes with government plates when Goshenko emerged from the building with Sergeant Anislov in tow. The two men climbed into the back, and a moment later the driver pulled into traffic. Goshenko sat in icy silence, furious that such a simple plan had gone so awry. The coded message had been sent to Denislav 15 minutes before. Target acquisition lost due to tunnel collapse. Crew injured. Awaiting new instructions at rendezvous point Charlie. It was a complete disaster, and one that didn't bode well for Goshenko's search for the library. Without Creed, and the map she had taken from the hand of the Virgin in St. Basil's, his chance of finding the vault where Ivan's books were hidden was considerably lessened.
Explain this to me. I divided my men into 5-man teams and assigned them locations throughout the city that fugitives might try to reach. One of those positions was an old ventilation shaft near the Moscow University, used by many of the region's homeless to access the underground. My intent had been to join whichever team encountered our fugitives first and to take command myself. But my man on the ground took that option out of my hands when he chose to follow Miss Creed and her companions when they entered the tunnels.
Why didn't he wait?
My guess is that he was concerned he would lose them in the tunnels. By the time I arrived at the location he reported from, both Creed and my team were long gone. I descended into the tunnels, but with no idea which direction they had gone or what equipment I would need to navigate underground, I had no choice but to retreat.
Your guess?
Yes, sir. I haven't had the chance to speak to the man personally yet, so all of this is conjecture on my part.
And you don't know what happened after that?
No, sir. The unit's radio equipment failed almost immediately after they entered the underground. I received their coded message only moments before I relayed it to you, after they had emerged from the underground.
Damnation.
The gates were open when they arrived, and the driver went through, pulling to a stop a few hundred yards farther down the road in front of a long warehouse. Colonel Goshenko got out of the vehicle almost before it had come to a complete stop, and Sergeant Denislav scrambled to follow. 5 men had followed Miss Creed and her companions into the underground. Now only 3 remained. The squad leader, Chernov, and 2 others. And they looked like hell. All 3 had minor injuries, and at least one of them had a pressure bandage wrapped around his head, indicative of a more serious problem. They were covered in grime and other less identifiable substances, which, from the smell of them, were probably best left unmentioned. The corpse of a 4th man lay stretched out on the floor, not far from where the unit commander was standing. Goshenko barely spared the others a glance as he marched over to the group's leader, Nikolai Chernov.
What happened?
We've been casing the entrance to the underground as ordered, when the woman and her 2 companions suddenly emerged from a vein close to the grate. The trio spent several minutes gearing up before removing the steel grate and disappearing into the tunnels right before our eyes. I didn't want to lose them the way the first team had at the hotel, so I made the decision to enter the tunnels and pursue them as closely as I dared. We lost radio contact with Sergeant Denislav shortly after entering the tunnels, and so I'd been unable to keep the 2 of you abreast of what was happening. I and my men followed Creed and her companions deep into the tunnels, going down several levels until they reached an older section of the underground. Worried that my squad might be stranded in unfamiliar territory in darkness, I ordered my men to move in closer so they didn't risk losing their quarry. Somehow, the woman became aware of our presence and laid an ambush for our point men.
An unarmed woman ambushed a fully armed FSS officer?
Yes, sir. She wasn't unarmed, though, sir.
So she fired on your men?
No, sir. Not exactly.
What exactly happened then, if she didn't fire upon him?
She attacked him with a sword, sir.
A sword?
Yes, sir. She must have surprised him in the darkness and used the sword to take him captive. He was scouting ahead, and when I caught up with him, the woman was standing with her weapon to his throat. From my position, I could hear her asking him questions.
I see. A sword? Really? Go on.
She took his weapon from him and then used that to hold him captive.
What happened to this sword?
It vanished, sir.
Vanished?
She must have put it down once she had the gun, sir. I didn't see it anymore, at least.
Go on.
To keep my subordinate from talking to our target, I was forced to terminate him. The target began firing back down the tunnel in our direction as a result. causing my men to respond in kind. All that gunfire caused the already unstable tunnel to collapse, burying the target and her companions under the debris. We barely escaped with our lives.
Where is the body?
Body, sir?
Yes, the body! Creed's body! Where did you put it?
We didn't recover the body, sir.
What? You left Anya Creed's body in the tunnels?
It was buried under a rock slide. What were we supposed to do, sir?
Sergeant.
Dunislav stepped forward and snapped to attention beside Goshenko.
Sir.
The colonel ignored the salute, snatching the pistol from Dunislav's belt. Chernov's lifeless body hit the ground like a bag of wet sand, blood bubbling from the hole in his forehead.
I want that body found and brought back to the surface. I don't care if you have to excavate half of Moscow to do it.
Understood.
The next morning, Anya, Gianni, and Vlad sat around in Vlad's tiny apartment in uncomfortable silence. No one wanted to be the first to suggest that their expedition was over, but it was certainly looking that way. The cave-in had been bad, and they were lucky to have escaped unscathed. Anya had a newfound appreciation for Vlad's ability to navigate underground. Without him, they would probably still be wandering those endless tunnels, lost in the dark. Her thoughts turned to their assailants from the night before.
Were they really FSS agents? If so, what did they want? They didn't stumble on us by accident. The first guy clearly knew who I was and was about to say something to me before he was gunned down in cold blood. Someone a little bit paranoid might think that the men we encountered in the tunnels were after the same thing we are, the library. Or at the very least, what we know about the library's whereabouts. Someone who's very paranoid might even come to the conclusion they'd been there to capture or kill one of us. In fact, I'm convinced it's all of the above.
Anya glanced over at Gianni.
I can't quite see him as a target of a Russian hit squad. The same goes for Vlad. He might be loud about certain issues, but I can't imagine any of his rhetoric bringing down the wrath of the FSS. Which leaves only me. I've racked up quite an impressive list of enemies, from petty thieves to international terrorists. What better place to arrange for me to have an accident but deep beneath a city far from home? Well, that's not a comforting thought. But then again, if I'd wanted comfort, I would have stayed at home. Well, now what?
Now what? Now we're done! Or did you happen to miss the 4 tons of rock that just cut off the only route we have?
Yet, we are not done. There is more than one way to, how you say, strip a cat.
To skin a cat. You know another route, don't you?
It is possible, not sure yet. Let me see map.
Anya glanced over at Gianni, who thought it over for a moment, and then handed over the map they'd found hidden in the Virgin's hand. Vladimir unfolded it and laid it out on the kitchen table. He studied it for a long moment. He then disappeared into a back room. He returned a moment later with an old-fashioned ledger book, which he put on the table next to the map. As he flipped through the ledger, Anya could see that the pages, like the walls in the front room, were covered with inked drawings of subterranean tunnels. Each drawing had been annotated by hand in fine Cyrillic script. It hit her then that what Vladimir had here was a treasure in and of itself, a constantly updated catalog of all he had seen and done in the caverns and tunnels beneath the city. Anya's hopes rose. Without the maps, the task had seemed hopeless. It would have taken them years to figure out a way around the collapsed tunnel and to get them back on track. But now, with the information Vlad had so carefully collected over the years, it might actually be possible. Their host spent several minutes comparing the images on various pages of his ledger to the map on the table in front of him. At last, he sat back with a satisfied expression.
Yes, it is possible. Very difficult, but possible.
Talk to me, Vlad.
We will have to go much deeper. 6, maybe 7 levels down. We intersect original tunnel here.
Vlad pointed to a spot on the map on the other side of the cave-in. Gianni joined them at the table.
If we've still got a chance at going after the library, what are we doing sitting around here then?
Not so easy. This route much more dangerous.
How so?
Vladimir pulled two folded sheets of paper out of the back of his ledger. When he opened the first, the others could see that it was a modern map of the Moscow subway system. He pointed to an area marked as the Ramenskoye district, about 50 kilometers from the city center.
Just after World War II, Stalin built underground city here in Ramenskoye.
An underground city?
The city, built to hold up to 15,000 people.
Vlad drew a finger across the map to show where it stretched.
From here to here, to protect the senior staff and their families in case of war with West.
What happened to it?
Nothing. The bunker is still there.
Can someone tell me why we're talking about a bunker complex? The library is somewhere beneath the Kremlin, not halfway across Russia, in some underground fallout shelter, for heaven's sake.
Metro 2. Well, I've certainly heard of it. Given Chasing History's monsters' penchant for urban legends, how could I not? But I'd always assumed that it was really nothing more than fanciful rumor. That rumor claims that there's a second secret subway system that parallels the public metro system, designed and built by the government for use in the event of an emergency. The KGB is supposed to have built the first line on Stalin's behalf, running directly from the Kremlin to the Soviet leader's private dacha. Several other lines are rumored to run between various ministry buildings and bunkers, like the one beneath Ramenskoye. Of course, that's all they are. Rumors, right?
Vlad unfolded the second piece of paper. This was a map as well, but unlike the first, it had been hand-drawn on very thin paper. A moment later, she understood when Vlad laid it over the subway map, allowing the first map to show through the second, and revealing how the Metro 2 tunnels crisscrossed those of the more modern Moscow Metro.
Duh, we enter through Ramenskaya bunker here.
Vlad pointed to a shaded area on the hand-drawn overlay. He then traced a blue line that ran across the city to another shaded area.
Take this tunnel here until we reach Academy of Oceanography Warehouse. Use Kremlin tunnel system from there to reach Vault.
Have you taken this route before?
Yet. Map comes from trustworthy source, but is not mine. I am confident I get you in and out without difficulty.
That's not the answer I was hoping to hear, but it'll have to do. All right, let's do this.
The call came in around 10 o'clock that morning. Goshenko was in the office and happened to pick up the phone himself rather than waiting for his secretary to get it.
Good morning, Colonel.
Who is this?
That's not important. What is important is that we are both searching for the library.
Go on.
I'd like to propose a partnership. I'll provide you with the information I have, including where and when that annoying television host is going to make another attempt to locate the library. And in exchange, I receive a share of the treasure when the library is located.
There won't be another attempt. Anya Creed is dead.
I assure you, Miss Creed is quite well despite the attempt your agents made to bury her alive.
When is this attempt supposed to take place?
Do we have a deal?
Yes, provided your information checks out.
Creed and her group will try again in a few hours. The starting point will be the bunker complex in Ramenskoye.
You can't be serious.
They have a map directing them to Fioravanti's vault. If we can get our hands on that, we won't need the Creed woman any longer.
As they piled into the van for the third time in less than 72 hours, Anya felt a decided sense of déjà vu. It seemed it was her destiny to drive around Moscow in a van that smelled like sewage, hunting for a library most of the world had forgotten. Thanks to heavy traffic, it took them just over an hour to get out of the city, and then another 45 minutes to reach Ramenskoye. Anya felt pretty good. She'd expected to be exhausted after being buried alive the night before, but she'd awoken refreshed, although sore. It was something she'd noticed before because of the sword. Her body seemed to heal faster than normal. Her dexterity and reaction time were getting better as well. Gianni, on the other hand, wasn't doing so great. He was irritable, snapping at even the slightest of comments, a result, no doubt, of the pain he was feeling from the gash in the side of his head. Anya had cleaned the wound as best she could and wrapped it in gauze covered with a topical anesthetic, but that had probably worn off several hours ago. Of the three of them, Vlad was the only one who had escaped without injury. His years of being in the underground had prepared him for the unexpected. Anya now understood why Sir Charles valued him so highly. Vlad was a good man to have around in a crisis. While the big Russian drove, Gianni used the satellite phone to place a call to Charles Davies. It was just before dawn in Connecticut. But given that they were headed underground again and would be out of touch for some time after that, it was important to bring their benefactor up to speed on everything that had happened to date. Or rather, most of what had happened, she thought with a twinge of guilt. She and Gianni had agreed between them that they would leave out any mention of the FSS hit squad, if indeed that had been what it was, and of Anya's own close call in the cave-in. Charles couldn't do anything about either event, and besides, they'd survived, hadn't they? Instead, they told him that the tunnel conditions had made it impossible to reach the vault from the direction they had originally planned on taking, so they were going to try an alternate route. He asked if they needed more equipment or more time to study the situation, to be certain that the option they were choosing was the best one available, but they declined. They strongly suspected they weren't the only ones going after the library, and if they spent too much time thinking rather than doing, they might miss their chance entirely.
All right, Anya, I'll trust your judgment. That's why I hired you, to make decisions and run the expedition the way you see fit. But if things get difficult, I want you to pull back and rethink this.
I will. I'll check in with you again inside of the next 48 hours. Until then, Charles.
Good luck, Anya, and be careful.
At his superior's command, Sergeant Danislav reported to Colonel Goshenko at his office and was handed the plans for this Soviet Army base-turned-KGB training facility.
Creed survived.
How could...
I should have known Chernov was an idiot the minute he started talking about that sword. My only regret is I didn't shoot him early enough.
Where is she now?
Making another attempt to reach the library through the derelict facility, for which I just handed you the blueprints. I want you to be sure she succeeds.
But why?
Ask yourself this. Why should we go through all the tedium of looking for Ivan's vault ourselves, when we can just let Creed do all the work, and then take what's ours once the work is done?